The name's Hatch. David Hatch. Managing Director of Radio, IC Drama and Variety Shows. Known for short as Mandy, R.I.C., D.A.V.s. My story begins one dark and stormy night in a small country vicarage.
Congratulations, Mrs. Hatch. It's a BBC executive.
Oh, dear. I was hoping for a boy.
75 years later, I was on my way to success. Fame and fortune beckoned, but I stayed at the BBC. It's tough at the top, and it's a little bit bendy in the middle. But I don't complain. In fact, I never complained until that fateful day, only a few short weeks ago, when I realised that BBC Radio was facing the greatest crisis in its long history. Only drastic action could avert the catastrophe that loomed. And the action I was forced to take was so drastic that the entire nation trembled as it heard once more that dreadful sound that it had hoped never to hear again. Yes, Lord love us, it's I'm sorry, I'll read that again, with the voices and what's left of the bodies of John Cleese, Bill Oddie, Tim Brooke Taylor, David Hatch, Graham Garden and Joe Kendall, with the music of Dave Lee and the Boys. Boys. And here once more for the penultimate time is John Otto Cleese to say...
It's I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Again!
Sorry, I do beg your pardon. Let me begin at the beginning. It all started with an emergency meeting of the BBC Board of Governors. They were practicing links for Terry and June. The Director General banged his gavel on the table.
Oh, me gavel!
Yes, nothing's changed in the last 25 years.
Look here, you governors, a catastrophe is looming over the BBC.
There's a threat to the busty bunny club?
No. Surely you know what the BBC stands for?
Not much!
Well, that's true, but it means the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Broadcasting? Sorry. No, you've lost me there.
What's he going on about?
Don't you chappies ever watch the wireless?
Certainly not. Nasty, modern, noisy, long-haired wireless.
Yes, in our day, wireless meant exactly what it said. No wires.
No transistors.
Nothing, just an empty box.
Yep, you can listen to it for hours, sitting by the fireside.
Twiddling your knobs.
Couldn't hear a thing.
Because you went deaf.
Radical of our street.
Well, it was. Those were the days.
Oh, yeah.
You could get a little peace.
And quiet.
Oh, no, she wasn't.
In the war, you could pick up Winston Churchill
with one hand.
The situation is grave. We are faced with a wireless crisis. I'm afraid there is. And only one man can save the day.
You sent for me?
Ah, come in, Mandy. Take a seat.
Thank you, sir.
Bring it back. Sit down on the chair. Now then, Mandy, our organisation is in serious trouble.
You mean the government's plan to privatise the BBC?
No, that's just a wild, irresponsible, nonsensical rumour put about by the government, so don't worry about that. Anyway, you've put in a bid for your shares, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely.
No problem there, then. No, listen, this is serious. It appears that every single one of our programmes is a danger to the ecology, and if that news gets out, we'll have the friends of the earth down on our heads like a ton of muesli.
But it's too late. It was on the news this morning.
Ah, this is appalling. You mean to tell me the BBC's putting out news programmes?
Well, yes. We've been broadcasting the news for weeks.
Oh, I'll say this about being DG. You live and learn.
They ran that story on yesterday's Today programme. Switch on now, we can catch the repeat.
This is the Today programme with Peter Hobgoblin.
And Valerie single person watch rumours.
And Brian Redhead is up in Blackpool. Speculation is rife that the government planned to sell off the BBC to private investors. I went along to put this to the Home Secretary, and I took my tape recorder with me.
What happened?
He gave me 10 quid for it.
This is Brian Redhead in Blackpool, where I'll be covering the Tory party conference in a very silly voice.
And over in Buxton, the SLD party conference will be covered by Cyril Smith.
Get off, Cyril!
Meanwhile, in Middleton Keynes, the Green Party conference has been receiving a grim warning from Friends of Earth spokesperson Jonathan Porridge.
Hello, Greens.
Yes, us.
I have grave news.
Oh, dear.
It has recently become clear...
Go on.
...that the greatest single threat, in fact, the only single threat to the environment...
Yes.
...is...
Yes.
...BBC Radio.
Leave it up, Jonathan.
No, it's true.
Well, stone us.
Take the ozone layer.
Thank you.
We used to blame the destruction of the ozone layer on those Chloroflora Robson Reader's Digest coupons, didn't we?
CFCs.
But we were wrong. The fact is, the ozone layer is being wiped out by the Derek Jameson Show.
Never.
Oh, yes. Listen to this.
Morning. Do they mean us? They surely do. Ha, 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 ha.
Yep. That's right. Every time he opens his big gob, he blows a ruddy great hole in the stratosphere. And...
what about the rainforest?
What about them? Well, 1,000 trees are being felled every day to provide spare heads for Radio 1 DJs.
Hi there, this is Simon Bates.
Timber! Whoa! Oh, yes, I know it will come as a terrible shock to the Simon Bates fan club, which consists of 3 woodpeckers and a lumberjack. But it is true, and there is worse.
Mercy!
Mass slaughter of whales for their blubber to pad out the Archer scripts, and to provide grease for David Jacobs' hair.
Oh, bitch.
Atmospheric pollution by the lead from Steve Wright's jokes.
Oh.
And now, is this the kind of world we want to live in?
Yes.
No. The world we want to live in is a place where all creatures can live in peace and in harmony. Now, some would call it paradise. Some would call it utopia. But I would call it a cue for a song.
Oh, yes, sing us a song, Jonathan.
No!
Too late! Early every morning I throw my bedroom window high and let the good keen air refresh my room. With welly boots upon my feet, I tiptoe through my garden suite and watch the sun come peeping through the gloom.
I can't see. Turn the lights on in my stowaway sun voice.
See the blind nocturnal mole shyly leap back in his hole.
Wrong hole!
And listen to the goldfish sweetly sing. A centipede goes tripping by. And look, there goes a butterfly. And hark, the birds are warbling on the wing.
On the wing!
Little flowers shake the dew drops from their hair. And new green shoots are pushing through the clay. I hear them take a good deep breath of morning air. As I listen to the breaking of the day. How are you this fine new morning? Can't you hear the flowers yawning? There's no more snow and oh, it's spring, spring, spring. All the birdies are tweet-tweeting. Up above the sun is beating. So sing with me, go hee-hee-hee. It's spring, spring, spring. All the little crows are crowing. You can hear them in the meadow every day. And the friendly farmers going to see them on their way. Oh, the bluebells are all ringing. And the bumblebees are stinging. Everyone can tell, oh, well, 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 it's spring, spring, spring. There's a vulture on my shoulder, and he says that I look older. And the hyena goes, spring, spring, spring. Little girls are growing pimples, little boys are growing dimples. And the cockatoo says, to you it's spring, spring, spring. In the meadow, joy is waiting. She's ready there for every little boy. You can hear them celebrating as they fill the springs of joy.
Ah, get off.
All the little lambs are bleating. They will soon be ripe for eating. So fill your tongue, sing yum, yum, yum. It's spring, spring, spring. Yes, it's spring. Thank you. And there's a new love. It will come to you if only you can wait.
I can't wait, I'm sorry.
Oh. I can hear the one that you love down by the old farm gate.
Ba 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 ba.
Yes, John, what was that?
A five bar gate.
I thought all around us, June is busting, and little boys are lusting. Oh, can't you guess? Oh, yes, yes, yes. It's spring, spring, spring. It's spring. Spring. Spring.
Director General, Director General, I can see your problem.
Well, I addressed it rather a hurry.
I meant the threat to the environment. What are you going to do?
Ah, well, we're going to broadcast nothing but recycled programmes.
That's brilliant. That's terrific. Oh, well done, well,
of course.
No, that's terrific.
Oh, don't forget, I was the man who discovered Jimmy Young. They can't call me out of touch.
You're out of touch!
Oh, I was wrong about that, too.
Recycle program.
Finally sunk in, has it? Good. Now, here's what I want you to do.
But I can't play the piano.
In that case, get back to your office straight away, take all the current BBC programs off the air and dump them.
So my mission is to fill the airwaves with healthy, energy-saving, environment-friendly recycled programs. Okay, just leave it to me. Taxi!
All right, where to, Gov?
Just get me out of this boardroom.
Oh, I'm on my way home. Which way are you going?
Back to my office.
Glasgow any good?
Near enough.
Righto.
There wasn't a moment to lose. Within weeks, I was back in my office where my faithful secretary, Miss Givings, was waiting for me. Miss Givings, there isn't a moment to lose.
Right.
Put them back on.
But it's Tuesday.
Nevertheless, in order to save the world, we're going to have to recycle old radio programs.
What, again?
Get me the dynamic new head of radio comedy.
He's already here.
Arnold Totteridge.
Ah. Oh, do you? I'm the dynamic new, dynamic new head of radio, I'm the dynamic new head of, head of dynamic, what was I trying to say?
You're trying to say I'm head of radio comedy.
So am I.
Oh. Right. Now, I want to recycle a load of tired old jokes and clapped-out routines. But where am I going to find them?
Oh, don't ask me. You're head of radio comedy.
Oh, God.
Oh no, wait.
I've got it. It's easy, the answer. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Of course. Anyway, that's it. We'll recycle the Clitheroe kit.
And call it the Crankies.
Yes, of course. Brilliant. The Clitheroe. I'm sorry, I'll read that again.
What did you say?
Oh, that's going back a bit. I said, how do you do? I'm the dynamic new do. I'm not boring you, am I?
I'm sorry, I'll read that again. That's what we'll recycle.
You mean the old team working together?
Well, there's a first time for everything. Now, what were the names of those two bods who wrote all the scripts?
Bill Garden and Graham Oddy.
I'll get on to them right away. It wasn't easy to track down the writers, mainly because they'd changed their names to Graham Garden and Bill Oddy. But eventually I traced them to London's Dockland in a block of yuppie flats which had recently been converted into a disused warehouse.
Come in.
Hello, I'm Mandy. You probably remember me better as old Kipperfeet.
Oh, good Lord, it's boring old Hatch.
What can we do for you, Mandy?
Well, look, I'm looking for a load of pathetic old gags, feeble puns, stupid voices, appalling songs, so naturally I've come to you. You're still writers, aren't you?
I should say so.
Are you sure?
Yes. Look, here's something I wrote this morning.
It's a prescription.
Quite a funny one.
You're obviously not writers. You're a doctor and a bird watcher.
Oh, no. Give us a break, Mandy. All we have to do is to dig up an old I'm sorry, I'll read that again script.
Yes, then cut out all the jokes that are rude or offensive or bad taste or out of date or unfunny.
And then stick them all together to make a show.
Perfect. And I'll get the original cast together.
What? The three of us and Jo Kendall?
Oh, you'll never get her. Her career... What? No, you know... Oh, no, you...
Turning into somebody, but I don't know who.
Hope it's somebody funny. You'll never get her. You know, her career has really taken off ever since she changed her name.
What to?
Meryl Streep.
Well, she'll do it as soon as she hears she'll be working with John Cleese.
John Cleese!
At that very moment, squillionaire recluse John Otto Cleese was orbiting the Earth aboard his customized space shuttle, the Ferret One. The aging, crazed, eccentric, cut a sorry figure, encased in empty Kleenex boxes and latex rubber sheeting because of his neurotic obsession with not being mistaken for Basil Fawlty. His long grey beard hung down to his knees, looped up behind his back and swirled round the top of his head in a bouffant quiff, held in place with blue tack to conceal the ravages of a failed, rather pathetic hair transplant. Weak from the exertion of counting his money, he roamed the lonely corridors of the shuttle in search of his faithful manservant, navigator, chef, charperson and psychiatrist, Robin.
Robin, open the airlock. What are you doing in there? Yes, on second thoughts, don't open the airlock.
Finished now, sir. Oh, my goodness. I haven't finished. Oh, sir, I've had an urgent message from the BBC.
I've told them I'm not buying.
No, they want to employ you, sir, apparently, on a radio program.
Me
work on radio.
Oh, it made me laugh too, sir. What shall I tell them then?
Tell them I'll do it.
Yes, you what?
I'll do it, but on two conditions.
What are they, sir?
One, they let me do a silly walk. Two, I can sing the ferret song.
No, they'll never agree to that, sir.
Well, please ask them, Robin. Please let me do the silly walk. Please. Do you know what it's been like all these years not being allowed to do the comedy legs? In Silverado, they wouldn't even let me hop. The part of the sheriff was crying out for it, but no, they said. They wouldn't even let the horse do it, and the ferret song was cut too. My God, Robin, even in my own movie, they held me back. You know, it was going to be a ferret called Wanda, but no. Oh, no. No, Mr. Smart-Ass Kevin Clock, my Oscar Klein bastard said, let's make it a fish. A fish. No, I protested. Shut up. But Michael Two-Face Kill My Dogs Palin said a fish. Brilliant, bloody Palin. 80 days, more like 80 years. Chip up his nose and he's anybody's. I mean, a fish can't do a silly walk, can it? Not like a ferret. I mean, can't it? Hello? Hello?
I've just been nipped down to the BBC, come back again. Apparently, they've agreed to your conditions.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
The recording is booked for next Sunday.
Oh, I can't wait. The silly walk. The ferret song.
Ah, but there's a catch. They want you to do a John and Mary sketch.
Who with?
That's all right. Meryl Streep.
Who?
John, is that you? I'm in the bedroom.
Eleanor, darling.
Eleanor? John, it's me. Mary, your wife.
Oh, I'm so sorry, darling. I forgot who you were.
You can't have forgotten. You only went out to buy a paper.
Well, Wapping's a long way, Eleanor.
Eleanor, that's all I ever hear. Eleanor this, Eleanor that, Eleanor the other.
Oh, you have found out.
Waking, sleeping, eating, breathing, Eleanor. She's constantly on your lips.
You've been spying on us anyway. I was only practicing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
You thought she was dead?
No, I thought you were dead.
John. John, don't lie to me. You were kissing each other and it hurts, John.
No, honestly, it doesn't. It's rather nice.
No, I mean it hurts me, John.
Oh, have you been kissing her too?
Oh, stop it, John. Don't you remember that sweet, simple girl you married? Soft and gentle and innocent, faithful and full of hope, John. Full of trust, full of...
Brown ale.
John, come through into the other room, won't you? I've got a surprise for you.
Not after all these years, you haven't. Why are we in darkness, darling?
I just thought you'd enjoy a romantic candlelit dinner for two.
Oh, good. Who's coming? Where are you going then?
John, it's for us. You and me, the two of us. It's our 25th.
Ah, no wonder I'm exhausted.
Oh, John. You will have your little joke. But then, so does half London. But I understand you with your little peccadillos.
Ah, how I love their little snouts and scaly backs.
Those are armadillos.
Well, of course they're armadillos. We bred them, remember?
Yes, John. That was the most painful thing you ever asked me to do.
Still, we... We laughed, didn't we? We laughed. Gosh, how we laughed when I plunged them into the boiling fat.
John!
Yes?
Why do you have to be so cruel?
Oh, I don't have to be. I just enjoy it. It's purely voluntary.
Let's not quarrel tonight of all nights. Let's bury the hatchet.
Good idea. Where is your mother?
Once there was something big and strong between us, something firm and comforting. Something a woman could grab hold of to turn to at night. Something that belonged only to you.
What did happen to my teddy?
Cleese has agreed to take part in the program. We only need to sign up Timbrook Taylor.
Who's he?
Oh, come on. You must remember Timbo.
Yes, of course I do. Just my little joke.
That's him.
Graham, I thought Tim had completely given up comedy.
Oh, that's right, yes. You remember we did the goodies together for over 10 years.
That's right. He gave it up just before that.
Yeah. And now he's retired to the anonymous little new town of Milton Sitcom.
That's a funny name, isn't it?
Mm,
Milton
Let's
Sitcom.
Hope so. In fact, there's his house right now.
I say, let's go inside and surprise him.
Right!
Yes, well, I thought we'd get out the car first.
No, never mind. I can see him coming up the path right now.
Hello, darling, I'm home.
Hello, darling.
Hello, darling.
Hello.
Darling. God, darling, what a day I've had at the office in the product testing department of the old rubber company.
Yes, I thought you'd lost your bounce.
I say, darling, that's stretching a point. God, I'm looking forward to a quiet evening at home, unless you've accidentally invited the boss and his wife together with the ghastly family we met while on holiday.
Well, yes, darling, I have.
Oh, no.
What'll I give them to eat? I haven't a thing in the house.
You've got this car. Funny, I never noticed the car before.
Hello, Tim.
Oh, my God, it's the vicar. My vicar, it's gone.
No, it's us. It's us, Tim. You remember. Look, it's us. You remember us, Graham Garden and me, Mr. Oddy.
Look, Tim, we have come to offer you a job. Let me tell you all about it.
This is wonderful news about Tim. Oh, I'm so happy. That's a dream come true.
No. Tim said he would do it.
Oh. Oh, well, you can't win them all.
Oh, but here comes Bill with the recycled script.
Oh, that's right. Great. Right, put your clothes on, Bill, and let's have a look at this script.
Okay, here it is.
And now, Prune Playhouse proudly presents a documentary reconstruction of the dreadful series of crimes which terrorized the inhabitants of Victorian London and left them stunned.
Oh, I am stunned.
Our story begins in London, 1888. Queen Victoria was still on the throne.
Oh, hurry up!
It is the night of November the 13th, and the city is in the grip of a thick fog.
Gotcha. Oh, my pineal gland aches.
In the dismal area of Whitechapel, the first of a series of victims makes her way homeward. It is Nellie Button, a lady of ill repute.
Oh, I'm ever so poorly in my repute voice.
In the sinister alleyway is Nellie Button, her clothes ragged and filthy, her hair unkempt, her face raddled and grimy, plies her trade.
Want an horrible time, dearie.
But little did she know what fate had in store, for behind her in the gloom a menacing figure slipped out of the shadows. Then, as Nellie stooped to adjust her shoelace, hands reached out through the mist behind her, the hands of... Jack the Ripper!
No, get it right.
Sorry already.
Better. Just. Yes. The fiend had ripped the very bloomers from Nellie Button and dashed off into the night.
Dash.
And that night, Jack the Ripper struck again.
Ooh.
And again.
Oh!
And again.
What's your game?
Next morning, the news broke. On street corners, news vendors shouted the headline.
The headline!
In Parliament. Questions were asked.
Now, Mr. Disraeli, I want you to think very, very carefully about this one. Who is Jack the Ripper? And whilst you're at it, who the hell am I?
Queen Victoria was not amused.
We are not amused. Ooh, I don't know, though.
The news reached Scotland Yard and sent the police reeling. The police superintendent was informed by his faithful sergeant.
It's Jack the Ripper again, sir. That's the fifth pair of bloomers he's got away with. This lad's a bit of a tearaway.
Don't bother me now, Sergeant. I have more important business. After all, this afternoon it's the Royal Garden Party.
You've been invited, sir?
No, but my garden hose.
We've got to stop him, sir. The people are losing patience, and the knickers. It's up to us, Superintendent.
Oh, I suppose so, Sergeant. We must go to Whitechapel this very night. He's bound to strike. Look at that fog. It's a real...
Pea super?
Just had one, Sergeant. Oh. Come on. Into that cab.
That cab, sir?
No, this cab.
What's wrong with this cab, sir?
Oh, well, it's all right. Now, to Whitechapel, aren't you going to come with me?
All right, sir.
Oh, the teeming nightlife of London's East End. The flower sellers, the urchins begging. And what's that fellow over there?
An organ grinder, sir.
Better steer clear of him then, Sergeant.
Their search took the gallant policeman through Whitechapel and into Limehouse, London's notorious Chinatown. Sergeant. Suddenly, a scream rang out.
Hello? Thank you.
The Ripper had struck in nearby Limehouse, London's notorious Chinatown. All right.
There's only one thing for it. We must seek help. I must go to number 221B Acre Street.
In his Baker Street rooms, they found Sherlock Holmes sitting on the fireplace.
Ha-ha! The great detective!
Bring me tea, bring crumpets, bring...
You rang, sir?
This is my faithful companion, Dr. Watson, MD, MRCS, and Webb's Wonder.
Webb's Wonder?
Oh, yes! I've got lettuce after me name.
Everyone a Maserati. Watson had brought them all cups of tea. He crossed to a table and put the china down. No! Holmes bowed low.
Jack the Ripper, he has strung again. No, he has struck again. That's much better. He has struck again. Is the might of London's police force powerless in the face of this dastardly scoundrel? Is there no end to this impudence? Caramba.
Congratulations, that display of absolutely appalling acting wins tonight's Robert Hardy Award.
Superintendent returned to the yard, where he was found by his secretary, Norma.
You'll find the Ripper soon. Incidentally, why are you sitting there pinching Oscar Wilde's bottom?
I'm at my wit's end.
Never mind, sir. I can help you look.
So saying, she leant across his desk.
No, don't move. Stay. Stay just as you are. For the first time, I'm seeing you as a...
as a woman. Before, I'd always seen you as two little bald men peeping out of a sack.
Take me in your arms and hold me.
Ian, watch it, mate.
Yeah, watch it, mate.
Who are you?
We're two little bald-headed men.
Then I was right. And what are you two men doing in this good lady's brassiere?
We're up for the cock. Up for the cock. Get it, get it.
Norma, this can never be. Until I have caught Jack the Ripper, I shall have no peace.
Not even me?
No, not even you, my little Norma with the laughing dentures. Which is why I've called in another investigator, the brilliant French or Belgian detective, Hercule Parrot.
Hello, hello, who's a pretty boy?
Aha! Hercule ex-Parrot.
Meanwhile, in Whitechapel, in the private bar of the old Goat and Terrapin, a meeting of London's underworld was in session.
Right, then, I call upon the General Secretary to call the roll of all members present with unusual and amusing names. I use amusing in the broadest possible sense.
Mr. and Mrs. Nee and their Swedish son, Lars Nee. And his sister, Betty Lars Nee. Mr. and Mrs. sitting for immoral purposes. And their son, solely sitting for immoral purposes. Mr. and Mrs., attention. And their daughter, Karen, who has turned down my offer and left home, so I shall be driving without you, Karen, attention.
The boss addressed the assembly in Cockney rhyming slang.
There's a bloke of great renown to a rising London town. They say that he's a gentleman or top.
Man or top.
This crafty gentleman river is a nigger slipper. If you're wearing them, and surely rabble them off.
Take them off.
Certainly.
That's totally irrelevant. Meanwhile, back at Scotland Yard.
Superintendent, I've got a hunch.
Oh, no, it's only us.
Only us having a look round the back. Round the back. We're having a look round the back.
No, no, we must trap the Ripper by setting up an irresistible challenge.
You're right, but who or what could I use to bait my trap?
Something monstrously tempting.
Yes, yes, something so hideously voluptuous, so gigantically perverse, so monumentally, insatiably pink and wobbly. A steaming, great jumbo-sized juggernaut of volcanic eroticism.
You call, sir?
Who are you?
I am Grimbling, but don't worry, I'll clear it up later. I am the butler, sir. I believe you're looking for a steaming great jumbo-sized juggernaut of volcanic eroticism.
Aren't you a little past it, old man?
No, no, I'm a little dirty old man. Anyway, I do know the very person you're looking for.
You know this grotesque, elephantine, quivering lust pot that I seek?
I do indeed, sir.
Then who is it, Grimbling? Who is it? I ask you, who?
No!
Lady Constance, how...
Carry on, young whippersnapper.
Nice to see you again. How long is it now?
Let me see. Thank you. Now, why did you send for
me, Shorty.
You have no doubt heard all about Jack the Ripper.
No, I wasn't listening.
Ah, a woman of taste.
Yes, a raspberry ripple, as a matter of fact.
Lady Constance, please sit down.
Where?
Oh, anywhere, or in your case, everywhere.
And so I shall.
And then in the ensuing chaos it happened. Lady Constance became the Ripper's latest victim. Just as I thought. Now I see it all.
Oh.
Nobody move.
Nobody has.
The door is locked. Oh. That means one of us in this room is the Ripper. Superintendent, what is your full name?
I am Superintendent Jack D. Ripper of Scotland. No!
And so time went by.
Bye.
Every moment of BBC Radio was carefully recycled, and for months, nobody noticed. But eventually...
And now, listeners' letters.
Dear Mandy, I sometimes get the impression that everything I hear on the wireless these days is a repeat. Am I right?
No, you're not right.
And now, listeners' letters.
Dear Mandy, I sometimes get the impression that everything I hear on the wireless these days is a repeat. Am I right?
No, you're not right.
And now, listeners' letters.
Dear Mandy, sometimes
yes,
I get the impression...
Right, all right. Obviously, I had to call a meeting. One by one, the cast of I'm Sorry I Read That Again filed into my office.
Right, that's me in.
Yes.
Don't you lot ever get tired of old jokes?
No.
Well, obviously you're all pretty pleased with yourselves.
Very well,
but we've got a problem. We've recycled every bit of clapped-out old material that we've got.
Sir, I haven't done my silly walk.
Well, that's one thing to be grateful for.
Or the ferret song.
Two things.
Yes. David, you promised.
Look, I am the Prince of Darkness. My promises mean nothing. Besides, John, the silly walk is rotten radio.
He said it was rotten radio.
Well, John, let's face it, there is just a teeny-weeny possibility that it might not be... quite so utterly side-splittingly, rib-ticklingly hilarious in sound only. But, I mean, I'm sure we can all imagine what it looks like. After all, we've seen it often enough.
You're being horrid to me.
No. We're not. It's only a joke. Don't take on so. Now, look, John, if you really want to do a silly walk, do it.
Do you really want to see it?
Oh, yes, can't wait. I'm really weeing myself with anticipation.
No, you're just saying that.
No.
It really is true, really.
All right. I don't suppose there's any chance of an announcement, is there?
Yes. Tim?
Ladies and gentlemen, for the first and last time on radio, pray silence, please, for Mr. John Cleese's world-famous silly walk.
Thank you.
Hey, was that it?
Well, I think so. I haven't done it for a long time.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, marvellous. Great. Oh, really worth waiting for.
Wait a minute. I left a bit out.
What, the funny bit?
Hang on, I get it. You're laughing at me, aren't you? Why are you being so horrid to me? We all used to be such chums.
When?
You used to encourage my feeble attempts to be funny. Remember, it was you lot who first introduced me to ferrets. I've still got the tooth marks. So are the ferrets. Nothing's changed. We're all the same fun-loving, zanny pranksters trying to brighten people's lives with a smile and a merry quip. It's just that I'm paid 20 million times as much as you. It's not my fault. It's just because I'm 20 million times more talented. But that's no reason to be beastly to me. Heavens, just because I'm mega-rich and an international sex symbol doesn't mean I'm not human. If you touch me, do I not squeak? If you prick me, do I not poke your eyes out? Don't despise me, please. Don't disown me, please. And please, stop playing that bloody trombone, will you? Very well. I shall go back to my money. The only friend I've got.
And you're rocking on.
Has he gone? Good. Right. Now I can get on with destroying the world. Right, the first thing to do is fire you lot.
No, not so fast, Hatch. I have just been perusing the government's plans for broadcasting in the 90s. All their knowledge and expertise is summed up in this white paper.
But there's nothing on it.
Exactly, that's why it's called a white paper. Mind you, I can certainly think of a use for it. On the other hand... but looked at differently... it sums up perfectly the future of BBC Radio. It's going to be sold off to the highest bidder.
Oh, if only we knew an eccentric old multimillionaire with more money than sense. John!
But it was too late. Even now, the pathetic old recluse was climbing back into his space shuttle, Ferret One, and opened the airlock and slipped through. Robin welcomed him back and helped him into his latex rubber suit.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you very much indeed.
Not at all, sir. Now shall I help you into your rubber suit?
No. Not now, Robin. Now, you see, if I'm to be denied the artistic satisfaction of doing the ferret song, I have no alternative but to become the richest man in the world. Quick, Robin, let's do another business trading film. You be the customer, and I'll be the shop assistant. I shall call it How to Sell Things by John Cleese. Right. First, the wrong way.
Good morning. Please, may I buy something?
No, push off, you boring little git. Now! The right way.
Good morning. Please, may I buy something?
Yes!
Is that it?
Yes, brilliant. That'll be £500,000, please.
Meanwhile, back on Earth, in the showrooms of auctioneers Krusty's...
The next lot is BBC Radio. Included in this lot is the managing director, and I believe we're also throwing in the board of governors.
That woke us up.
What's going on?
Well, apparently we've been sold.
Oh, it's been sold up.
Radios 1 and 2 sold to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
What? Murdoch? Oh, brilliant!
Good eye, Cobbers.
Yes! Yes.
And radios 3 and 4 sold to Mr. Robert Maxwell.
Who?
Maxwell.
What? Maxwell? Oh, fantastic! My favourite! You could do it while you walk. Absolutely. Oh, he's doing it! Look at that! Marvellous!
Brilliant, yeah.
better than that loony Basil Towers.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Funny walk, bad Australian accents. Cleese.
Yes, what do you want?
Oh, what a giveaway. You've bought BBC Radio.
Well, you gave me no alternative. The BBC will become broadcasting by Cleese. One station, playing 24 hours of highbrow music, namely, the Ferret Song.
Hold it. Hold it, hold it, hold it. Hold it. Oh, thank you. You can let go now. Now, John, you can't just launch into the... What was it?
The Ferret Song.
You might wake up the audience.
You're trying to stop me again.
No, but John, something as lovely as the,
The Ferret Song.
The Ferret Song. The Ferret, that's it. The Ferret Song needs a proper setting.
Oh, that's it, yes. It should be the grand climax of a musical. The hit song.
You sing it.
And we hit you.
Oh, I see what you mean. Something like Ferret at the Opera.
No.
Seven Brides for Seven Ferrets?
No.
Aspects of Ferrets?
No.
Okay, Oakley Ferret.
No.
Bring a ferret.
No.
And a bottle. No, all right. Crocodile Dundee, that's it. Ferret Dunclees.
No.
Well, you could do lots of Australian jokes.
Oh, yes.
Late arrivals at the barbecue.
Right, you're on.
You're on.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, please. And please feel free to join in at the end. Mr. and Mrs. Bong and their son, Bill.
Bong.
Mr. and Mrs. Zing Matilda and their cousin, Walt.
Zing Matilda.
Mr. and Mrs. Jing Pom and their granny, Wen Jing Pom. You're catching on, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. and Mrs. Abara and their cook, Abara. Quicker, please. We haven't got all year. Mr. and Mrs. De Platypus and their duck, Bill Platypus. That's better, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. and Mrs. Reef and their terrific brother, Great Barrier Reef. Mr. and Mrs. Rise Up in the Morning and their son. And not forgetting Mr. and Mrs. Kangaroo Down Spot and their cousin, Jaime Kangaroo Down Spot.
Enough of that. At last, the cultural experience of the hour, nay, the week, nay, the century, nay, the very pinnacle of the entire history of the universe, the Ferret
Song. Now, John.
What?
John. Dear old thing, just before you do anything embarrassing... Are you absolutely certain about this ferret business?
Certain.
I mean, you are a sex symbol to millions of American women.
True.
And, I mean, call me old-fashioned if you like, but I don't think going eek is terribly erotic.
Well, I do.
Yes, but you're weird.
Don't put it this way. It's not plausible. I mean, do you really think Jamie Lee Curtis would have been so turned on by your squeaking? I mean, you try the Russian, nothing. The Italian, nothing. Sniff the armpit, nothing. Underpants on the head, nothing. But you go, eek, and it's take me big boy. I mean...
We shall see.
I've got a ferret sticking up my nose. He's got a ferret sticking up his nose.
How it got there, I can't tell, but now it's there, it hurts like hell. And what is more, it radically affects my sense of smell.
His sense of smell.
I've got a ferret sticking up my nose.
It pokes its head out every time he blows.
I can tolerate it for a while, although it's absolutely vile. It's not as bad as last week when I had a crocodile.
in a side there too. I shall be the proud possessor of a kind of nasal zoo.
Ah, hi, Jamie.
Take me, big boy.
Spoon tune proves too much for the band as we end this special 25th anniversary edition of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. The voices you heard were Tim Brooke-Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, David Hatch, Joe Kendall and Bill Oddie. The script was by Graham Garden, Bill Oddie, with Joe Kendall and Lizzie Lord. The music was played by Dave Lee and the Boys, and the songs were by Bill Oddie and John Cleese, and the producer was Richard Wilcox. Why not join us again in 25 years' time? When John Otto Cleese promises not to say...
I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Again.
I'm sitting in my fatherland, I have a good laugh.
The 16th day of the afternoon, my name is Angus Green.